Well, hi there. I finally am making it back to read the next chapter of The Door in the Wall to you. We are on chapter 2. And here is the picture that starts chapter 2. So this book is a really fun book, and it's also in the Moonlight curriculum for C, okay? B plus C. And also C, which is approximately third grade. Here we go. May came in with a burst of bloom in hedge and field. There was hawthorn, both pink and white, and primroses and buttercups carpeted the fields with yellow. In every garden, wallflowers blossomed in bright color and filled the air with perfume. For days, Robin was cared for as if he were a little child. Brother Luke brought him food, kept him washed, and changed his clothes. But he was too much occupied with other things to stay with Robin for very long at a time. The bells clamored as loudly as ever, but now the sound was associated with the regular procession of the monks going to devotions. Robin grew to like it. He began to sleep well on the hard cot and to feel at home in the little cell. He could see nothing but the sky through the small wind hole. For it was high in the stone wall, and only in the early morning allowed a ray of sunshine to come in. Against another wall stood a prayer stool and desk combined, with a small one beside it. On the wall hung a little cupboard which held Brother Luke's personal belongings and his breviary. Robin couldn't see into the corridor, and at first couldn't identify all the sounds he heard. He liked the shing sound of feet on stone as the monks passed to and fro. Sometimes when they passed in procession, chanting, he joined in the singing, for most of the plain songs were known to him. Sometimes there were long silences when he heard nothing but the mewing of the cat, Millicent, or the squeaking of a mouse she caught. There she is. There were hundreds of people within the hospice, but they were separated by thick walls and long passages. The outer court was far away at the other side of the monastery. There, visiting pilgrims, knights at arms, merchants, and minstrels gathered, each awaiting the attention of the prior. Because there were few inns, the monasteries were open for the entertainment of wayfarers, rich and poor alike. Besides that portion reserved for travelers that was an almonry overflowing with the poor, well, there was an almonry overflowing with the poor of London, seeking food and clothing. St. Mark's was a busy place. But most of the activity was far away from Robin. He was much alone, and time seemed long. One day, Brother Luke said, "It is time now to try thee sitting up." He was rubbing Robin's legs, as he did every day, talking the while. "If thy hands are busy, time will pass more quickly. Dost like to whittle?" "Of course," answered Robin. "Who does not? But I have not to whittle. I shall find thee a piece of soft pine, and will lend thee my knife. 'Tis sharp and of good steel. This bench will fit against thy back to support thee." Brother Luke set the oaken bench at Robin's back and fitted a cushion for his comfort. "Can I make a boat?" asked Robin. "Can I make it now?" Brother Luke nodded and left the cell. It seemed long before he returned. Finally, he brought the knife and the piece of pine he had promised. It felt smooth and clean to Robin's hands, and he liked to watch the small white shavings peel off. At first, he scarcely knew where to begin to bring out the shape of a boat. But little by little, he began to round out, and at one end, a point began to appear, as if it had been a prow. "Perhaps I can make it into a sailing boat like the fishermen bring to Belen's Gate, or a barge such as the king uses," he said. "Perhaps when it is done, I will be able to walk and can go to the Thames to sail it." "Perhaps," agreed the friar. It was very exciting, but Robin had to stop often to rest. Brother Luke brought soup in, which with dark bread was to be sopped. Robin didn't want any of it. He wanted only to go on with his whittling, and turned away from the food. But 'tis made of good mutton in which bay and marigold have been seethed, Brother Luke coaxed. Brother Michael grows these fragrant herbs in the garden. Bay is tasty and gives good appetite. Marigold is said to be of value against poor sight and angry words. It is said 'twill draw evil humors out of the head, and the flowers make fair garlands for maidens because of their golden color. What cared Robin for garlands for maidens? What cared he for fragrant herbs? Soppy food he despised. Brother Luke looked patient, said nothing, but continued to hold the food ready. And Robin gave in. He drank the soup and ate the bread dry. Because he had something interesting to do and to think about, Robin found the days passing more quickly. He began to recognize sounds as he had done before, and to associate footsteps and differing gaits with the people to whom they belonged. Now and then, one of the monks would look in on Robin to give him cheer or to say an ave, so he knew several of the monks by name and could tell which of them was passing. Brother Andrew, he knew, because he dragged one foot a little. Brother Thomas walked very swiftly, heel and toe, whistling tunelessly under his breath as he went. Brother Paul was a large man, and when he walked the walls, heavy as they were, and when he walked through the corridor, the thudding of his feet seemed to shake the walls, heavy as they were. Besides, one of his shoes squeaked. Robin worked steadily at his little boat. He finished the hole on the fourth day of the second week. I see this is to be a sailing boat after all, instead of a barge, said Brother Luke. It is somewhat awry, with the bow aslant from the stern, but it hath an air as if it had been battling the storm. Brother Luke brought small, slender pieces of pine and showed Robin how to smooth them into mast and bowsprit, then found scraps of linen for sails and pieces of yarn for rigging. He even begged a scrap of silk ribbon from a traveler for Robin to use as a pennant for the masthead, as if the toy boat had belonged to the king's fleet, Robin thought. Never before had Robin done anything of the kind for himself. Always one of his father's retainers had made what toys he had. Once Rolf had made him a hobby horse, and once Alfred the Dane had made him a boat, but it had not seemed so fine as this one. Now he could hardly wait to begin something else. He would like to carve one of those dwarves, for example, such as those in the roof bosses in his father's house. Brother Luke suggested something easier. Patience, my son, he said. It takes great skill to carve figures like that. Why not make a simple cross? 'Twill be fit to hang over thy cot if 'tis well made and smooth finished. I'll find some pieces of wood and will show thee how to begin. Always, while Brother Luke talked, he rubbed away at Robin's legs, then turned him and smoothed his back. Busy as he was, Brother Luke found time to bring Robin the pieces of wood he had promised. These I saved from the pruning of the walnut tree that stands by the well, he said. It is weathered, for it hath lain in sun and rain these many months. And how shall I fasten the pieces of the cross together? Asked Robin. Shall I nail it then? Or how shall it be done? When thou art ready for that, Brother Matthew will show thee, answered the friar. Now make it smooth and fine and have it well proportioned, for it will be a keepsake and not a toy like the little boat. That I leave to thy judgment, for 'tis part of the joy in making things. Each day the pieces of the cross grew smoother and better shaped, for Brother Luke would examine them and show how they were too wide here or too uneven there. Each day, too, Robin grew stronger and could work longer before resting. The knife fitted his hand and obeyed his thought more truly. One or two cuts on his fingers had taught him caution. Many times Robin held the shorter piece of wood across the longer piece to see how it would look, and would ask, "Isn't it time now to put them together?" But each time, Brother Luke's fingers sought out rough places that must be rubbed down with pumice. Brother Luke was busy all day caring for the sick and the poor. From vespers until the early bedtime, he served his turn in the scriptorium, where all the writing was done. Once he had carried Robin to another part of the monastery and showed him where records of everyday living were written and poems and psalteries copied. Each monk had a small enclosure of his own where he could be quiet to do his work. Brother Luke set Robin down beside him on the oaken bench in his own particular place, where he could spread out the pages of handwritten manuscript on which he was working. The pages were of sheepskin called parchment and were covered with careful lettering and decorations. Gold leaf illumined the capitals and the delicate tracery which bordered the pages. Robin wished he had known how to read what he saw. He wished he could dip the quill into the ink pot and inscribe letters and draw pictures such as Brother Luke had done. And then that made me think of a picture that's right at the beginning. Kind of there. Uh-oh, I shut the page. Where was I? Let's see. "Will you teach me to write?" asked Robin. "We were taught singing at the brother school, but I know not writing. Will you teach me then?" "Yes, my son, truly I will, when there are not so many people to care for. But come now, back to thy cot. First we shall stop to say a prayer in the chapel for thy strengthening." He lifted Robin to his back again and started down the corridor. In some places, the passages were so crowded it was difficult to get through without stepping on someone. Old men and women in pitiful rags sat hunched against the wall or lay upon pallets. Among them went the brothers of the order and sister in the priory nearby, cleansing and feeding, comforting them. Ill-clad children ran about, and a small girl child clung to Brother Luke and begged to be carried. A boy not much older than Robin came hobbling toward them on crutches. He smacked Robin as he passed and saluted him, seeing how Robin's legs were lame, even as his own. "Good eve, Brother Crookshanks," he cried, laughing as if it had been a great joke to be lame. "I see I have good company." Robin's anger rose at the familiarity. "Keep your filthy hands off me, lout," he shouted. "Hound's meat, I am no more crook-shanked than you." But even as he spoke, Robin was considering the crutches and thinking how convenient they would be for himself. Then he remembered that even yet his legs would not support him for a moment. Brother Luke scolded the boy, but laughed, too, at Robin's anger. "Fie on thee for an impertinent lad. Still, Crookshanks he is, truly. His legs will be as good as thine one day, boy, and then he shall keep thee company right enough on his feet." He went on toward the chapel, speaking to Robin over his shoulder as they went. "The lad meant no offense when he called thee Crookshanks, Master Robin. 'Tis but the way we all are named, from some oddity we have, or for where we live, or for what we do. This boy is called Geoffrey Atwater because he lives by the River Fleet and tends the conduit there with his father. He was so called before he limped as he does now." "Oh, Robin, I wondered why he is not called Geoffrey Crookshanks. Now I understand." Brother Luke went on to speak of other names and how they began. "Now I was called Chaucer because my father was a shoemaker. But since I have taken a vow to be a monk and to serve our Lord wherever I am most needed, I have taken the name of Luke, the physician in the gospel. And my father is Sir John de Beaufort because he came from that place. Is that the way of it?" asked Robin. That is the right of it," agreed the friar. "When Geoffrey called thee Crookshanks, he did it because thy legs are thy legs and none others. Richard Smalltrot is he with the short step. and not Richard Crowfoot, whose feet splay out like fans. Robin laughed. They went into the chapel. It was empty, being between time for service. Brother Luke placed Robin on the stone seat bordering the wall, propping him against the column which rose high to the vaulted roof. Say there, and in thy mind, know thou art on thy knees. Forget not to be thankful for all thou hast. Remember thy lady mother and Sir John, thy father, who is at the wars, and pray for us all. Then he left Robin and went apart to his own devotions. But what have I to be thankful for? Robin thought rebelliously. How will my father like a son who is called Crookshanks? But somehow, as he began his prayers, he felt better. And that, my friends, is the end of chapter 2. That seemed short. Well, very soon I will come back and read chapter 3 to you. I hope that you will subscribe to this channel, Humble Bee Pie, and you will hit the notification bell so you can know when I come on. And we will see you next time. Be sure to share with your friends so we can keep this story going. Thank you for joining us. Have a great day. Bye.